Speaking today with State Representative Armando Wally, who represents District 140. Representative, you are finishing your first term in office. Was it what you thought it was going to be?
I think it was that and much more. It's been a good, and it, for me it's been great because I get to represent the folks that I grew up with, and the expectations are really high. Obviously for myself, but from folks that I go to senior citizen centers and, you know, I see it, or anywhere, actually, at the grocery store, at church, folks are really high on expectations, and they want to see a product. And the product, particularly for our office, is constituency services, because we are a high, basically we're a needy district. It's one of the lowest per capita income districts in the pretty much in the whole state. I think it's probably close to $10,000 to $12,000 a year. And with that, we've actually had to hire more staff because we've been getting a lot of response from folks, particularly on our Spanish-speaking folks, because we have a high immigrant population as well. And we've been very aggressive in doing all our outreach in English and Spanish. Newsletter that went out a couple of weeks ago, we did it in English and Spanish. And we've started to receive a whole bunch of calls from folks. A lot of them are not state-related, but we do have to respond to them. It can be a sewer line backup. It could be a street overlay. A lot of municipal city issues that need attention. We also have part of the district which is unincorporated. About close to maybe half the district is unincorporated. So we have areas in the district that don't have sewer and water connections. They're still on septic tanks. My predecessor, to his credit, was able to author the management district bills a couple of sessions ago, where there's 4 or 5 management districts, special taxing districts, where some of them get a penny sales tax. One is the East Alding Management District. They've been able to leverage funds from the federal government and from the county to get some of these folks online, to get them connected to access to quality water. Because of the low-income areas that we have, a lot of those folks don't have the resources to maintain the septic tanks. So you have a public health problem because the quality of the water, the sewer systems are very poor, so you'll have sometimes sewage in the ditches. So you can have they've been actually very successful because of that need to get Texas Water Redevelopment grants, and we've been pushing the Water Development Board to issue more grants, and we've been successful with the Airline Management District. We received about $1 million to do their study, to get them on track to get sewer and water connections in the city. So these are, out of all the issues, I mean, obviously the very important issues are the budget, which will affect us downstream. Education is really very important to my district, because I have 3 public high schools, which is Albee, MacArthur, in Aldine ISD, and then I have HISD's Sam Houston, which is probably one of the biggest schools in HISD. And obviously that school was reconstituted a couple of years ago. Unfortunately for our schools, with the Texas projection measure, it's a double-edged sword. We've had progress at Sam Houston, but as Representative Hochberg is very, the research he's done has been very good in a sense that to tell us where exactly where we what we need to do without the TPM, and because there's a lot of active parents over there that are clamoring for change, and they're getting that, but you know we got some challenges that we need to tackle over there. So those are, you know, education is really huge on the agenda.
But let me jump in here. I mean, you talked some about, you know, the basic infrastructure needs that a large part of your district have. I mean, basic things that many of us take for granted, like sewer and water hookups. You know, the irony, of course, is that in a district like yours that's low income, high immigrant, it's going to have low voter participation, and their political clout is low, and they're going to be the first ones on the chopping block in bad budget times, which we're in. How do you deal with that so that you can at least not lose too much ground?
Well, one of the things that we're doing is we've been working with a group called Texans Together. They've been very active in our district, particularly in the North Aldean area, in my district and in Representative Thompson's district. We share some neighborhoods, some civic clubs, where half the district is in hers and half the other civic club, or the neighborhood, is in my district. They've been very active in creating and helping create civic clubs out there. They've been going around a couple of years ago, before I actually filed to run, they had block walkers out, volunteers, because they actually have a 501c3 and a 501c4. And their nonprofit arm was able to go out and do a survey, and just asking folks what are their needs. I'm going to do that actually at the end of the year with the limited resources we have at the state, do kind of the same kind of, I wouldn't say campaign, but mail out to my district to figure out what are the needs of the district, hoping that we can get some feedback from folks. But Texas Together has been really good about organizing some of their parents, or some of the residents, and getting, they actually came by the office with about over 500 petitions signed by residents of this neighborhood. So I think that's a start. That's a group that's been very active in the community. I know they have a campaign to register 100,000 voters. It's the same group that had a kickoff, I think, last weekend. Well, not last weekend, but maybe last Thursday or Friday, I believe. And some of their volunteer staff are my constituents. They were recruited, just their kids that go to Aldean High School, or at that time graduated from Aldean High School. Now they're students over at Lone Star College. But there's a push now to get a lot of our folks, particularly in unincorporated Harris County, involved in the political process. The management district that we have, East Aldean Management District, Richard Cantu, who used to work at the city, he was the director of the mayor's citizen assistance office. He's one of our precinct judges. He's been able to recruit a few more precinct judges in our district. He's been able to help us, partner with us to start creating other civic clubs. There's a group called, that was just created this past year, Taskfield Civic Club off of Little York, right in the heart of my district, Little York and 59. We're going to create, actually, my old neighborhood, which is technically called Farrington Place, but most of the neighborhood we call it Epson, near 59 and in between Parker and Tidwell. On the east side, to start creating these civic clubs, you know, helping them with the infrastructure of having bylaws and electing officers, because we have very active parents at that particular school. So I think those are the kind of the signs that a lot of our folks are starting to pay attention. And I think one of the issues is starting with the PTAs, and that's been very effective for us, is starting with some of the PTA presidents. At Sam Houston, it's the same way. Marina Mendoza has two kids at Sam Houston. She's been very aggressive with the administration before they reconstituted Sam Houston. She's very aggressive now. So we have some movement now. So for me, I'm optimistic that will translate into higher participation at the polls. Because before, we didn't have these groups that could help us, that we could tap into, say, block walking for a particular candidate or block walking for a particular issue. And for us, it's important. I have one of the lowest voting districts in the whole state, voting participating districts in the whole state. So it is a challenge. One of the things that I'm going to do also is we're going to start a mentor program here in the office to try to get more young people involved. We're going to try to target. We have a model already. We kind of have a rough draft of what we want to do, but we're going to probably pick maybe 3 to 4 kids per high school and just kind of groom them and show them, you know, have them visit here at the office. Want to be able to have them come with me and visit City Hall and do basic life skill training for some of these kids that would be potential leaders in the in our neighborhood. So that's another piece that we're going to do. I'm also actually, I've been discussing a little program with Representative Coleman because he's a mentor of mine, and I bounce a lot of ideas off of him because of obviously his experience. To just do another grassroots run through my district again and start block walking again, even though I don't have an opponent, but to get them engaged, to let them know that, hey, we're out there. We're here to serve you, particularly at the state level, but also participate just to come out and vote. In my race, there was a lot of folks that voted in municipal elections or school board elections, and particularly that school bond election was important for my area. That didn't necessarily vote in primaries. We were able to target some of those folks, but there are folks that do participate, they just don't participate in primaries, which obviously this is a pretty safe Democratic district. But you're right, because of that low participation, you know, we're going to be the ones that are going to suffer the most when it comes to access to those services.
You're on the Health and Human Services Committee, and one of the things that does is it provides funds to county and city governments for a variety of services, mental health in particular. And again, you know, this is a target for cuts. You know, let's target for the 5% and 10% across the board departmental cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see any good coming out of that? I mean, my concern would be that that's passing the cost on to the local governments, and it's targeting programs that reduce costs in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, it would be catastrophic. I mean, because the initial 5% cut that was proposed was implemented, then the additional 10%. So you're talking about, you know, 15% cut prior to going into the session, or proposed cuts going into the session. And the projections are that, and you mentioned mental health, you know, 250 some odd million dollars taken out of the budget for mental health services. Obviously, that'll have an enormous effect on the county jails because, I mean, that's the, you know, I think a couple of weeks ago that I'm not sure what official said this, but was quoted as saying that this Harris County Jail is the biggest mental health facility in the state, and it is. So if you take those services or those type of the little money that some of these diversion programs get, you take that off the table, I mean, you're going to exacerbate a problem that we already have at the county jails with overcrowding. That's just one example. You could potentially have a whole bunch of resources where HPD is having to deal with more mental health, and they are. I have a lot of friends, good friends, that are beat cops. They're, you know, patrolmen, and they anecdotally tell me that, you know, they see a lot more, they have to get more crisis intervention training because they get so many more I guess, arrestees or potential criminals that have mental health problems. So that's just one example. Now, on Health and Human Services, you already have, we're getting reports from some folks at CPS that, you know, they're backlog. I mean, they're having 30 and 40 cases, up to 50 cases per caseworker. You know, when we had the couple of years, I guess we had some of the deaths occur. There were some infusion of monies that went to CPS, and obviously some of the, my understanding is some of the deaths went down. But if you tack on, you know, more of those resources off the table, then you're going to increase the caseload for some of these caseworkers, and that's going to have a direct effect on being able to serve or investigate potential abuse of children.
I mean, the focus in the budget is always, you know, everyone talks about cuts, cuts, cuts. Do you believe enough attention is being paid on the revenue side, and where would you like to see some attention paid on that?
I think you have, you know, you. I know that Chairman Rene Oliveira was going around the state and kind of scaring folks into, he wanted to talk about, review some of the exemptions that some industries get. Obviously, for Houston, it's tough for us because we do need the jobs that are provided at the port and the petrochemical industry, but they do get exemptions. There was one particular organization, I think it's called the Texas Water Association, Waterway Association. They get exemptions for some of the resources they use on repairing barges, on the parts. They get exemptions for using parts, and they're afraid that if their exemptions go this next session, that their work's going to be sent over to Louisiana. So it's a double-edged sword for it, but where do we find new sources of revenue if we don't take a look at the franchise tax again? Obviously, the gambling issue is the big issue.
Would you support a gambling proposal?
I think that's a band-aid. I think that's a... Gambling, particularly for our area, is... It's a tough issue. I'm still not there, to be honest with you, on gambling. I think it's, as I mentioned before, it's a band-aid for any revenue that we would get out of gambling. You know, even if you do full-fledged casinos, I mean, where are they going to be? Who's going to, you know, just that whole process, I think, it needs to be fleshed out more. I'm glad that the legislative study group has, you know, already held a hearing. I think the licenses committee maybe had a hearing already a couple of weeks ago. I don't think it's the solution. I don't think gambling is the solution. The argument is that, well, you know, they're already gambling, they're already going to Louisiana, all you see in Louisiana and Oklahoma, New Mexico, is Texas license plates. That's true. I actually have a bus depot in my district where folks park at this depot and the casinos pay for these charters to go to Louisiana. It's a couple of blocks from my house, and that facility is always packed, ready for folks, senior citizens and folks. A lot of my seniors go to the casinos. I'm not comfortable with gambling being the new revenue source for Texas.
What's your assessment of Joe Strauss as Speaker of the House?
I've been at the beginning, obviously, we were very high because we wanted to see some a different tone, and I think from talking to the other members, everybody mentioned that, oh, you're coming at a good time. It's not like it used to be, or this feels not like 07, 05, 03, where it was very contentious, and particularly in 03 because of redistricting, because of all the budget cuts. But there was a different tone. Folks actually were talking to each other, but I think during the voter ID issue came about, and it just basically, in my view, ruined the session, because they were very strategic on their end to put voter ID first before the TDI sunset bill, because the TDI sunset bill was they were going to have to take some tough votes, and they acknowledged that in the press and in private, that they were going to take some hits on the TDI sunset bill. So they, a lot of those guys didn't want to get to the TDI sunset bill, so they strategically put voter ID in front of it. We got through the chubbing, and I have to say, I mean, I participated in the chubbing. I, for many of us that represent majority-minority districts, you know, voting is very important to a lot of my constituents, and I was disappointed that they didn't take the leadership didn't take a more active role in preventing that from happening.
What would be the effect of voter ID legislation on your district?
Well, you could, in essence, shave off a couple of thousand votes statewide, and it could be the difference in, you know, who do you elect as governor, or who do you elect as speaker? Because particularly if you shave off a couple of thousand votes and from a member in a swing district in maybe East Texas, well, they're not swing districts in East Texas anymore, but let's just say one of our East Texas districts where a Democrat is a member, and you have maybe, you know, a couple of thousand, a good number of precincts that are, let's just say, in Marshall, Texas, where it's a lot of African Americans, and there's lots of pockets of African Americans in East Texas, and you shave that amount of votes off their margins, they don't come back. You know, those districts don't come back, those members don't come back as Democrats. So you potentially could lose 3 to 4, the projection was up to even 6 Democrats from the Texas legislature. So for us, obviously, for the issues that are important to us, we'd like to have a Democratic speaker. I mean, that's just, there's no doubt about that in my mind, that particularly for the issues that we care about, we need to have a Democratic speaker.
Okay. And are you concerned about the possibility of an Arizona-style immigration bill being brought to the House this coming session?
I'm very concerned. Actually, there's a group of, I think it's the Hispanic National Assembly. They meet in a restaurant in my district, and they invited Debbie Riddle to their meeting a couple of weeks ago, and I was there participating in an anti-protest because many of us vehemently oppose any type of Arizona-style legislation in Texas. It just doesn't make any sense for Texas at all.
Well, again, what would be the effect in your district, do you think?
You know, I think in my district, being 72% Hispanic, I'm afraid that if you give that much authority to law enforcement, you know, they could single me out because of the color of my skin, and stop me in the legislature. I don't carry my birth certificate on me, but if they reasonably suspect that I'm not in the United States legally, that gives them a reason to hold me. You know, why would I? You know, there's some constitutional issues there. One being unreasonable searches and seizures. Two, equal protection under the law. It's, for me, those two issues, studying it now in law school, during constitutional law class, the lights started to, you know, shine bright on some of these issues for me, and it got a lot more clear that many of us really are going to fight tooth and nail against any Arizona-style legislation in Texas. Because why? I'm an American citizen. I was born here. Many of us are American citizens. We're, you know, we just so happen to have roots in Mexico or Latin America, but many of us are very proud American citizens. I would want to tell those folks on the other side of this issue, you know, have them be stopped by a police officer because they really suspect that they are not here in this country legally, and have an officer interrogate them and try to ask questions about them. They probably would not like that. And they shouldn't like that because many of us are American citizens. And it's just a, you know, fear-mongering on their part.
Okay. What's the one thing at the top of your list to do for the next session?
One thing on the top of the list, there's many, but one of the issues that we're going to probably have to deal with for us is the budget shortfall in education. Aldine ISD has a $50 million shortfall already. They're going to go to the voters to try to get as 13 cents per household. They have a campaign right now to do that, to try to push that issue, but it shouldn't have to come to that. For me, that's probably the single most important issue that many of my families will have to face. You know, Albany ISD is 67, close to 70% Hispanic now. 10 years ago, it was maybe 50%. Just the explosion of the population, and that feeds into probably the second most, which is the redistricting. For us, you know, our districts are particularly at the federal level. Obviously, they're voting rights districts, the 29th, the 18th. The 9th it's a majority opportunity district, but no single minority represents or is populated in the 9th, represented by Al Green. So redistricting is going to be huge for us as well. But in our district, I think that's those two issues, 1A and 1B, are very important because it's redistricting is hard to explain to my constituents and to anybody on how important it is because it's not tangible. They don't see it like education. They see it because they know that, you know, they have their child is one of 30 or 40 kids per one teacher. You know, they can see that. They can see that schools are cutting back on sending their kids to band. I have one of my schools that are sending their kids to the band programs. One of them is not sending their band to football games. I'm actually helping to write a grant for one of my track teams they don't have the adequate resources for running shoes, or uniforms and meals. These are actual cutbacks that the school districts are doing that they're having to do to maintain their budgets, and they can see that. Even though personally redistricting is number one, to my folks, education is number one.
Okay. Representative Armando Wally, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.